I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Actually, not as cold in here as I thought it was going to be.
No.
I was worried this morning, Tony.
Was you?
Well, yeah, the i5 read minus one when I first got it. You know what's quite impressive about electric cars? Here we go. That they can defrost so quickly. Do you know about that?
I know about that, yeah.
You've experienced that?
I've experienced it, yeah.
I mean, you know, there's a positive.
we're not all negative about electric.
Yeah, which is all right for a week a year.
Can you imagine if we did a whole episode?
The best thing about electric cars, the fact that they can defrost quickly. back to V12s.
Yes. Talk about that for an hour.
Oh, my God.
Defrosted.
We'd lose even more subscribers. What a disaster.
Right, let me get myself comfortable, settle in. Nice little morning pod. I like these morning podcasts, actually. It's
I do, well, yeah, it? Because yeah. we're refreshed, aren't we?
The day hasn't beaten us down yet.
Yeah.
Haven't lost too much money yet.
We haven't made any, have we?
No. Hello, one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass, your weekly automotive podcast hosted by two rather uninformed enthusiasts.
Nah.
I'm Sam from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
And you can watch us each week. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Do you ever remember you're a bit younger than me. Do you remember the paper form Auto Trader magazine? Do you remember going to the shop and buying?
No.
Oh, right. You missed
I didn't
that.
Do that. I, because magazines, I really only ever bought F1 racing.
Right.
Don't forget, the car thing came late to me.
Right.
I was all motorsport.
Fair.
So I wasn't sitting at home flicking through car magazines. I would watch Top Gear. I wouldn't buy the magazine. Mate, I can't read.
No. Well, hold on a minute.
I can read better than you. I don't read.
Right.
I like to look at the glossy pictures, apart from the F1 racing mag. So yeah, so long story short, no. But that was your Bible, was it?
Oh, mate. Like literally, I'd go down there every Thursday. People would be reminiscing to this and thinking, flipping, I used to do the same thing. Mm. And you'd buy the Auto Trader book. And I even remember when I first become a motor dealer. It was before I'd just become a motor dealer, but I was still working in the motor trade. And the Auto Trader man used to go around to the dealers and take photos of the cars. And wow. And then he'd go back and upload the photographs.
But there must have been multiple photographers.
No, one for the whole country.
It can't be one.
Because that's what you
it's
were.
It's like Father Christmas.
Yeah, literally. Because you were like, the Auto Trader man would come around. I was like, yeah, there must have been multiple
millions
men.
Of them. Yeah, there's millions of them. And then they created this book. Obviously, it used to be published. And what reminded me of it, I saw a clip on, I think it was Instagram, and showing all the old cars and that, and like old Sciroccos and Renaults and all the old cars at like 5995 and all that. And
well, sometimes you get people, they'll share old ads of Ferrari F40, 140 grand,
yeah.
You know, like Carrera GT,
yeah.
200 grand, and going, wow, how time to change.
But that was a lot of money back then, by the
way.
Oh,
yeah.
You know.
It was a lot of money, but also don't forget, it was prior to a time where things did just depreciate. Like, you know, that's the other thing which we forget. Things did just absolutely tank. And you know, late 90s, early noughties, there wasn't the same collector market that there is today, I don't think. You know, it was all for pre-war stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the 60 stuff was doing okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, I remember clearly when I left my PR job and set up my PR consultancy, which was a disaster,
That go.
I am awful. I was looking at buying a 993 911 and they were 15 to 20 grand.
Yeah.
15 to 20 grand. You would struggle to get a 993 for less than 75 today, a decent one.
Yeah, yeah.
And there were like plenty to choose from for 15 to 20 grand.
There's so many examples of it, you know, and the reasons for that is one demand. A lot of people my age, maybe a little bit older, they were all poster cars and they've earned some money and they've gone back and bought them, you know. And I saw a story the other day of a guy who'd bought his dream, I can't remember what car it was now, but it was a car of my era, and he'd worked his whole life for this car because he'd, I mean, fair play, man, but when you're doing that,
that's what it's all about.
It's what it's all about.
It's what it's all about. But yeah, as you say, that the collector market usually moves with the generations. So you know, the interest and the appetite for pre-war cars is now really reducing because most people who are in a position to be collecting cars or buying cars don't have any real world experience of pre-war cars, you know, apart from maybe via their father or their grandfather. So that's why you're seeing this big upspike, especially in the Japanese market. You know, some of the stuff I was looking at, the auction, which auction was it, some of the auctions coming up just full of Japanese cars.
But because that's because the American market as well,
of course, obviously. The Americans can now import them. But at the same time, even just here in Europe, the market is flying, you know, for the Japanese stuff. So and that's because we all grew up, or my generation grew up, your generation grew up, Gran Turismo and Need for Speed, and these were the cars on the front covers. So yeah,
for sure,
that's what people want to go out and buy.
Yeah, it's amazing how it changes. And don't forget as well that cars are a huge tax break for an investment point of view.
Oh yeah, it's an asset class.
It's an asset.
Investment.
Yeah. So there's no tax on it. So that's also why prices have gone the way they've gone, because the big money have all come in. Some of them don't even know anything about cars.
Well, I would say that there are two different customer bases, or two different collector bases.
Yeah.
You have the enthusiast, then you have literally just the asset collector.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, as cars have become an investable asset class and really have given the returns that they have, you've got people coming in purely from a money-making scheme.
Yeah.
They buy delivery mileage cars, they stick them away, they don't really know anything about the car apart from they're sold the key information, the key stats.
Yeah.
They're sitting on it for 10 or 15 years and then they're flipping it.
Yeah.
You have a hybrid of the two, I think, savvy enthusiasts who are looking at cars that they can buy, that they want to enjoy, that they understand the reasoning behind, with the aim to make money off.
Yeah.
And then you have just pure enthusiasts who end up buying the right thing at the right time and ride the wave.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's fascinating to see. In my world, I meet really a mixture of all of them. You know,
of course.
I get to go and meet these different collectors or owners, I get invited to drive things or go to different shows. And I cannot knock the pure asset class investor, because we're all trying to make money. Like, you're kidding yourself. We're all trying to make money.
Yeah.
And if somebody came up to you and said, look, buy this thing, and in 5 years' time, it's either going to be worth double the money or at least, you know,
30% more. 20 or 30%,
you'd go, hell yeah.
Yeah.
It just happens to be that we love the things that these people are buying and we get upset that they're not being used or driven or enjoyed. But you can't knock it. So I'm never there to say.
It's up to them what they do with their money once they bought it. If you don't want to drive it, don't drive it.
A delivery mileage car is a delivery mileage car. Like, I get it at that point. What else are you going to do with it? You know, an enthusiast. I'd love the idea of an enthusiast going out and buying a delivery mileage McLaren F1 and then putting 10,000 miles on it. But so few people are going to do that because of the money that will be lost.
Yeah.
You know, the money that's required to get in.
Yeah.
So
I know some people fast forwarding that are trying to do that with modern cars now.
Yeah, of course. So of course.
I know people that have got delivery mile GR Yaris's and even heard of a guy the other day that bought a Vorsprung RS3. Modern.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Never used it.
Yeah, no. I mean, you've got to play the game, right?
Well, 30 years.
Yeah, you got to play the game.
It's just got to sit there forever, yeah.
But that's the thing, I think a lot of people in that world, auction world, investor world, are trying to figure out right now is what do the next 10, 20, 30 years look like for the collector market? Because as I say, the pre-war stuff, even the 50s and 60s stuff, you know, the market is shrinking for that kind of stuff, 1,000,000%, because the big money guys, crypto not so much anymore, but still, people who are making a ton of money now in their late 30s, 40s, some are younger, are buying, yeah, 90s and noughties cars. You saw that collection that blew up over Christmas, suddenly appeared over Christmas, that Tim went to film, which had like a Reventon, a Singer, I can't remember what else was in the collection. But anyway, apparently a very young guy.
Fair.
Very young guy, has been super successful. Hey, look at Lee collection.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in the grand scheme, and that's all modern cars. So if you're someone who's advised in the classic car world, you're probably thinking, oh God, how do I entice these guys to come and spend the money here? And there are still enough old boys and old gals that are buying the sort of art pieces.
Yeah.
But less and less so. So you're right. There's a game to be played of, look, over the last 5 years, what are the cars that could, in 30, 40 years' time, fly? And you've got, I think you need to have kids around you to tell you, right? What are the 12 and 13-year-olds freaking out about right now?
Electric cars.
You might not be wrong, though.
Yeah.
You know, you might not be wrong. Everyone keeps telling us. And I think 7 and 8-year-olds are being educated to only care about and see
that's
the
what
point.
My daughter, that's how old she is.
Yeah.
That's what she talked about.
So you should buy a mini electric.
Now.
And not put a mile on it and leave it on charge for 30 years.
And then in 30 years, you're going to have to replace the battery and it's not going to be worth anything. Well done.
It is fascinating, though.
Not really.
Because do combustion engine vehicles, do any just become art, physical bits of art that you put on walls? You know, people...
Not in our lifetime.
Yeah, but
not in our lifetime, too many.
There are already people doing it with things like 60s 911s, even motorbikes, you know, hanging cars on walls and stuff. Like, it's not completely unheard of at this stage to
right,
treat...
That's 50-year-old stuff then, so another 50 years. So I'm right, not in our lifetime.
Okay, so I didn't mean would cars that are being made today become art. I meant in general, will cars become more? Will the collector scene become less about driving and more about art?
I think that's already started, mate. Yeah. I think that started a while ago.
Yeah,
people that are giving £1 million for Carrera GTs and nearly £2 million for F40s and all that.
Yeah, you're probably
that's
right.
That's
it's
art,
to,
mate.
It's to look at and
yeah,
to
that's not to drive.
Appreciate the story. It's not to, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But God.
You've got Enzo's at nearly £3 million now.
Yeah, it's
like,
a joke,
isn't
it?
That is not to drive and enjoy. No chance.
What's going to happen with my challenge?
Oh, do you know what? Do you know what as well when you reminded me about the Lee collection? I'm not going to talk about the Lee collection, but you reminded me about Australia. I've got a very good customer. He's Australian. He watches the show, actually.
Good day.
Bought a car from him last week. And he told me a story the other day, which horrified me, by the way. Do you remember when we went to Sydney and we went to that nice little lunch spot in the bay? Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, yeah.
Hold on.
When we went to the national park.
Oh my God!
Come on, mate.
In Sydney,
but when you drove the
when we drove with the what's it called, McLaren Elva
and the Black Series,
yeah, CLK yeah. Black Series, yeah,
and we
yeah,
went
yeah.
to that beautiful little
yeah,
bay.
Yeah, yeah,
with
yeah.
The...
Sorry, that was in the Northern Beaches.
Yeah,
yeah, fine. Yeah, yeah, go on.
So, and I asked the waiters at the time, are there sharks in that bay?
In the bay, yeah,
in the bay,
yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
he said, well. Probably, and then one of them said, "No, don't be so stupid."
Yeah, there's this charity where you swim to the island. Yeah, 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 yeah.
But there's a woman got eaten there, had her leg off last week, a week before, whenever. Mate, that's terrifying. That was a lovely little inviting bay. You go in, you get eaten.
But I told you, Vicky went and swam in that bay.
That's not
funny.
She
was on a paddleboard. This is one of my favourite stories. Because we were staying there because my godmother used to have a house in that bay. And it was like, you could paddle down to the cafe for lunch. So Vicky was like, I'm going to go on the paddleboard. And on the way back, these kids, local kids, there's a stingray underneath you. There's a stingray underneath you. So Vicky started having a panic attack. Like, she's like, oh my God, what do I do? Like, with the stingray. And she couldn't paddleboard. And they're going to get a stingray. It's going to get you. And she couldn't see it. So she's looking around going, where's the freaking stingray? Isn't that what killed Steve Irwin? And she never worked out whether they were trolling her or not. But now, based on your story, they probably weren't. They were probably just telling the truth. There probably was a stingray ready to eat Vicky.
Well, they sting you.
Sting Vicky?
Well, they don't eat you.
Well, who knows?
But this is a shark, mate. I mean, I know a stingray killed Steve Irwin, bless him. But
this woman only lost her leg. Steve's dead.
Well, yeah, he is, but it was an accident. You know what I mean?
I think the shark biting the leg was an accident as well.
No, mate, it's not funny. And I saw a clip the other day of one right in Australia, right on the beach trying to get another fish. I mean, you literally go in the sea, you're dead. I'm not going in there, mate. I told you.
Mate, do you live in Australia?
No, luckily.
Are you going back?
I might have to. are we going back?
I think calm down. That's what I'm going to say. Calm down with your shark fears.
All right.
Exciting news, I guess, for us, but potentially bad news for you. The Portugal tour sold out.
Sold out.
I mean, like...
3 days.
I mean, literally, gone. So we have 10 very interesting cars signed up. Very lovely people.
What, they're all Porsches?
I mean, literally, I think like 70% of them are Porsches, which is a bit of a joke. We've been going back thinking, have you got anything else you might want to bring? Because this has become a Porsche tour. Yeah. But yeah, no joke. Like literally 70% of them are Porsche GT cars.
Yeah.
But yeah, a real nice variety, some super nice people. We're very, very excited. We are running a waiting list, of which there's already, I think, about 6 or 7 people signed up, properly signed up for the waiting list. So if you are desperately interested and intrigued, you can still get in touch and inquire about the waiting list. But if I'm honest, it's almost chapter closed with the Portugal tour. We will be announcing tour number 2, the September/maybe October event, probably as soon as that event ends. So the April week commencing the 15th of April, once that tour's over, we'll probably then announce tour number 2.
Yeah.
So stay tuned for those of you that have missed out or those of you that are looking forward to doing something a little bit different to that. More details to come around April time of tour number 2. But thank you for the support. Thank you for the inquiries. We're quite excited, aren't we?
We're very excited, mate, as well. Yeah, I can't wait, to be fair.
It's a new era.
I don't know what... I keep debating what car to take.
Oh.
No, because like...
But you're the crew car, mate.
I understand.
You gotta keep that in mind, that you're very much, you know, both of us, we're playing a support role to our attendees so that they can have the maximum experience.
Yeah, so
it's not about us having the maximum experience.
I understand that.
You don't have to reveal anything, by the way.
I'm not going to, because I still don't know what car I'm going to take. I can take a practical car or a less practical car, basically. You know, I'm leaning towards the practical car.
I think you need to take the practical car.
I agree.
All will be revealed soon. We will be revealing beforehand what cars Tony and I are taking. Mine will be less of a surprise. Yours, maybe. I know. Who knows? Plenty more on that. And as we mentioned last week, I'll be doing main channel content. There'll be podcast content. So you'll still be able to come along with us virtually or digitally on that tour. Now, I wanted to update you because last week I went to drive the new Range Rover Sport P635 SV First Edition.
So that's the new SVR, basically.
Yeah. No. Catchy name, isn't it? I actually don't know how we'll refer to it. Do we call it the new SV, or it's the SV, or the P635? Because what's the Defender V8 is officially called the P something something something, isn't it? We just all call it the Defender V8.
Well, yeah, that's what it is. No?
So yeah, so I think we just call it the Range Rover Sport SV,
or just the really expensive Range Rover Sport.
Well, yeah,
really expensive.
So we come back to that, I guess.
I think we got it.
How intrigued are you or were you about that car?
Never that or am.
Why?
Because what's wrong with the normal one?
Quite a lot, if I'm honest. How much time have you spent in the new Range Rover Sport?
A bit of time. I've had about 3 in stock.
Yeah, have you driven them around?
Yeah.
I think they're underwhelming.
Well, like all modern cars, mate.
No, I disagree.
They're all underwhelming.
I think the big Range Rover is overwhelming. I think the newest generation big Range Rover is superb.
Yeah.
Very hard to knock apart from its size. That Range Rover Sport, I think, lost a lot of its identity. It blurred into Velar/Big Range Rover. It became a lot more serious. It was very plush. It didn't kind of seem as appealing. It, price-wise, got a lot close to the Big Range Rover. I don't know. My dad had those Range Rover Sports for years and years and years. There was always a charm to them. I always enjoyed driving his car. I always enjoyed getting in his car. I thought they looked cool. They looked different to the big cars. Then that new one came out, and it just all got a bit blurred and messy, and I spent 6 weeks with one, that P535, the Larry
last year,
in the south of France. I just kind of was a bit like, just a bit cumbersome. Like, remember I did that drive down, and I text you being like, I've never been more comfortable on a drive down to Monaco, and I've never been more bored. Like, It just didn't do much for me.
I can probably sum this up for you.
Go on.
I can probably help you out here. So the old car, kind of as expensive as it was, kind of punched above its weight, essentially, compared to the old Vogue. So they'd be closer together, but it was still quite a lot cheaper. And actually, it drove better. Not down the road better, but dynamically, it drove a lot better. Whereas the price of the new car, as good as it is really close to the Vogue, but the Vogue is leagues ahead.
That there you go. That's exactly what it is. And obviously, my experience with the car in the south of France meant a lot of twisty, narrow roads up on cliffs and down.
Yeah.
And so dynamically, I needed the car to not be as wafty as it was. But yeah, it's just lost. So for me, there was room for improvement. I did not think the room for improvement was with an SV badge or SVR badge. You know?
But I think it's a perfectly good car, mate. Me, the sport, fine. The normal sport. Yeah, you know, we've said this before, I would definitely have the Vogue over the Sport.
Well, there you go.
Whereas probably in the old car, would have had the Sport over the Vogue, essentially.
My point is proven then.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, that still doesn't mean it's not a good car in class.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
You know, when you consider they have dropped in value quite a lot, especially when you compare it with the old car. The old car held its money for a lot longer than the newer car. So the newer car wasn't really overs ever. But there was a small period of time where it was, and that might be a moment in time. But the older shaped car, there was like a point, there was like a 2-year wait for them.
Yeah.
I mean, you literally couldn't get them.
I agree with you. It's a fantastic car. Mm. It just excited me less or excites me less. I thought the hybrid was spectacular that I drove in Spain during the launch. I know Harry Metcalf just went through all the finance on it, and the hybrid was a lot more, is a lot more expensive to own and run and buy and things like that. So he went with the diesel. But anyway, long story short, what I'm trying to get on to is I thought there was room for improvement.
Yeah.
And now I would not buy any other Range Rover Sport except the SV. Bear with me. Let's not get onto the price. bear with me. Because, okay, performance-wise, who sort of really cares? Because I'm still of that mindset of who needs a super SUV. Like, I'm still I'm still kind of anti the super SUV thing. Mm. They're so impressive. But I'm like, how often do you drive an SUV like that? Mm. Even Euros, Turbo GT, like all of these things. I'm like, how often are you getting an SUV and going for a blast on an Alps road or waking up on a Sunday morning going, I'm going to go for a nice little drive in my SUV?
Now, their problem is, mate, as well, there's so many other cars you could have that, all right, they're not SUVs, but just in general, there's so many other cars you could have for loads cheaper that would be better.
Well, you could still do, you could do the two car, you could still have a fast 4-seater saloon and a practical SUV the money of a super SUV. So long story short, I struggle with that. But, so the performance is very, very, very impressive in terms of 0 to 60s and horsepower. It's that BMW, it's the M5 engine, essentially. Yeah. And it feels a bit M5.
Turned up as well, right?
Turned up, So it's like nearly 640 horsepower. The thing that is mind-boggling about this car, they're calling it 6D Dynamics.
Mm.
It has the dual damper setup, essentially, that McLaren uses.
Mm.
It makes the ride unbelievable because turned down in everyday mode, it is incredibly comfortable.
Mm.
It's as a Range Rover should be, and it's tighter than the standard car. It actually behaves better on a road, in a city, in a twisty road. Like, it is in cover mode. Everything is just a little bit more, less wafty, less, doesn't feel so heavy to turn through the bends. Turn it up into SV mode. Holy crap, mate. I just knocked super SUVs. It's unbelievably accomplished.
Fair.
As good as any of those fast things. I said in the video, it reminded me, in terms of the way it eats up the bumps, of the Pura Sangue, because of the speed you can carry over a bump. I think it's less brittle than a Urus Performante. Turbo GT, I think I drove on a very, Cayenne Turbo GT drove on a very smooth road, so I can't quite remember, but it is very, very...
RSQ8?
I think it's better than an RSQ8.
Fair.
It's super, super impressive.
Mm-hmm.
actually enjoyable to drive. You've got to turn traction off. Most important thing, you have to turn traction off. Obviously, it literally doesn't let you go anywhere. Super, super impressive on a very tight and twisty road. Like genuinely, the front end is almost a bit too eager at times. The steering.
It's got rear steering, that's why.
Well, no, but the standard car has rear steering, or you can option rear steering on the standard car. It's not like they've tightened up the steering rack massively. So the steering ratio. So it just is almost too direct. It's almost too, the inputs. A lot of the time you'd get to the corner and the front end would go and you'd feel the weight and the rest of the car being like, no,
oh, mate,
I can't follow. No, it's not. Right. It isn't. Like, it's not a frightening car to drive. It's all very progressive. It's very enjoyable. It's very easy. I see you're desperate to not like or be impressed. It is very good, mate.
No, I'm not going to say anything because I've not driven it and I'm not driven it at any sort of speed or pace, but what you're describing, I get, and I respect your professional opinion, obviously, but I can't compute or comprehend in my head that really when you show it a corner at real speed or pace that it won't be that good. I understand. You drive it on the road as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. Only on the road. I didn't go anywhere near the track.
You didn't go on
the
track?
What's the point of going on a track in an SUV?
Well, I agree, but there was a.
Everyone went on track. I was like, what's the point?
No, I agree.
The international launch was going on track. I was like, why am I going on track in an SUV?
I agree with you, but that's what I'm saying, that these manufacturers now, you know, they'll put a press thing out for it to go on track.
But no.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I agree with you. Like,
why? On.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? I only drove it on the road. I did 600 kilometres in it. I did 600 kilometres. I sat on the motorway the entire way up to Lisbon. I did 270 kilometres on the motorway. Perfect. As a Range Rover Sport should be.
Perfect.
Loads of music. All the adaptive cruise controls.
Lovely tech.
Perfect. Like, yeah, great. Yeah.
Lovely place to sit.
Got into town. Lovely, manoeuvrable, easy, totally fine.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
On the way back, I went avoid motorways. Had an absolute blast.
Lovely.
Had an absolute blast. And so... Of course, mate. I'm not saying for a second that the car is not big and heavy and desperate to understeer and all of these things. I'm never, ever going to deny that that's the fact.
But it hid its weight perfectly, right?
It controlled its weight perfectly. It didn't hide its weight. That's a 2.5 ton plus. Like,
at least.
But it controlled it very
well.
Right,
okay, good.
It didn't ever, apart from if you leave traction on. If you leave traction on, it despises going fast.
Yeah.
But if you turn the traction off or just dial it back into the track setting... It lets itself be driven fast, as any of these super SUVs do.
Why M3 is the same?
Yeah. Okay. So, they are super close.
Right.
As the perfect sporty, all round, practical daily car, for me, it'd be between Sport SV and the M3 Touring in terms of they are very dynamically similar. Of course the M3 is a lot more dynamically in tune, but you still, it's got that similar vibe
Yeah, you can see similarities, fair.
Problem is, the SV is twice the money.
Well, and this was literally, while you was talking, I was literally thinking in my head, what's wrong with a 60 grand M5?
And honestly,
yeah,
that is the point, because it's very, very good. And of course, you know, even if you take new car for new car, the M3 Touring is nowhere near as plush as the Range Rover. The badge is different. Everything about it. People like the SUV vibe. Like, I get it.
Mm-mm.
But my other problem with that is because the Sport has blurred that line, it's not impactful enough. The old SVR was so leery. It was so in your face, no matter where you saw it. Like the noise, the big gills in the bonnet. Like everything about it was like, rah!
Yeah.
This one is, I mean, okay, fine. In the first edition with that paint and the lime green calibers and stuff, like it's doing its best to be in your face, but it's still super subtle.
Yeah,
I get out a few times and be like,
so, and probably super quiet as well, right?
Engineered noise inside.
Whereas the SVR really is a, I think they're unbelievable. Them cars, SVR for 60 grand for a 3-year-old one.
Yeah.
I mean, what a car!
And that, so for me, this is where it came down to. The thing that I was doing is like. You don't need to go that fast in that car. You don't. It's so impressive that it can. But what you actually gain by their desire to make the car that capable of is the slow speed gains.
Do you think it's dynamically as good as like an RS6?
Yes. I don't know if it's better.
Because an
I hated driving the RS6 far.
Because when you start showing that car some corners and really giving it stick, the RS6, it's quite cumbersome.
Yeah.
And reminds you a little bit of an SUV, to be fair, because it's big and heavy and understeery. All the things the M3 Touring isn't, by the way, which is why it's dynamically loads better than an RS6. That's why I say, do you think it's...
I would prefer to drive the SV over an RS6 on a twisty road.
Fair.
If you put me on the top of the transfer garage.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Well, that
tells
you something.
The two, I get in the SV.
Yeah, that tells you something.
It's a really good car, but you're just... Who is buying it for what is 180 grand?
Plus.
Well, so that it starts, supposedly, the first edition, which is theoretically sold out, but call your Range Rover dealer, because I doubt it is. It's 171 grand. But then to get the super spec with the carbon wheels, lol, and the carbon ceramics, lol, it's an extra 14 grand. So you're up at 185 for the car that I drove was 185.
Yeah.
It's, you know, DBX 707, beyond Cayenne Turbo GT, not that you can get them anymore.
DBX 707 is more than that, no?
It's like 190 something, so it's another 5 or 6. Right, but I mean, as much as we slate that car, it's a bloody Aston Martin.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
like,
no, I agree, mate.
That, for me, is like, well, you've just... Hey, this theoretically sold out, which from a PR point of view is half the job done.
That's a lie.
Because who's actually... Like, what? What? For a Range Rover Sport, 185?
I've had two customers in the last month that have ordered them and asked me if I should take them because it's a lot of money. Mm. And they've cancelled both of them. Both of them cancelled.
Hey, I'm the biggest JLR fanboy in the world.
Yeah.
I obviously lean more towards Jaguar, but I love a Range Rover product. As I say, those big Range Rovers, I would have in a heartbeat if I had the money and the space.
Yeah.
The Sport is very good. I just didn't like it as much. But across the board, I mean, my mum's had a vote. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
That's almost, I'm like target demographic.
Yeah.
But you've just ruined it with that price tag.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, we know Range Rover Sport, new one, has been expensive anyway, but... Even if it was 150, you'd be like, okay, I kind of get it. Theoretically, it's limited, blah, 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 blah. But 185, it just annoys me. But it just annoys me.
I agree. And the older shape SVR, obviously this new one's a better car. And by the sounds of being quite a lot better.
Yeah, miles better,
yeah,
I would say.
Yeah, but well, the interior for a start, before you even turn a key. But that old car was... 100 grand, 105, 110 if you got a Larry one.
So double the money, almost.
Nearly double the money. I mean, it's a little bit of a pee take when you think about it, really. And actually, like, what is it, listening to you for 5 minutes, what does it actually really compete with? Like, for the money, like, you'd have, probably have the Porsche over it.
I'd say it's, that's the most... appropriate rival because they're equally as bland. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean?
Like, but like, that like, Porsche GT is very good though,
it's
right?
It's unbelievably good, yeah. But it's the same thing where only the nerds know it's a Turbo GT. Yeah. To everyone else, it's just a Cayenne. Yeah. And it's going to be the same with that Range Rover Sport
yeah.
SV.
Yeah.
Most people use a Range Rover.
Yeah.
But go on, what else would you compare it with or rival it with?
Well, if you're going money, you have to compare it with the big hitters as well, like an Urus, mm-hmm. like the 707. Mm-hmm. And it's not that brand to command that money. Mm-hmm. I know an Urus Performante or an Urus S, they are more once they've been specced, but list for list, there's not a great deal of difference between the two. And then obviously you go extras and they start piling up. 707 the same. But we all know I'm not the biggest Aston fan, but I'd have the 707.
I know, that's what I couldn't believe. I was saying the same
Did
thing.
You?
I'm like, I hate that. I hate the TPX. But I would pick it in price for price. If
yeah,
I
agree.
And but for me, the big resolution is the 60 dynamics, all the improvements have made the Range Rover Sport better at lower speeds and in everyday situations. At which point, if you're thinking of spending that much just to get a better Range Rover Sport, buy the big Range Rover.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because unless you really think I'm going to buy this SV to go on come on the Portugal tour in a Range Rover Sport SV, or you're going to do track days at Silverstone every other month, firstly, you're buying the wrong car for both situations. But long story short, then just go and buy the big Range Rover. So again, like it's just, I was so annoyed because I loved it. And I was like, I just would have one of these. I would hands down have one. If it was 110 or 15 grand, I would be like, yeah, cool, I'm going to do it. And I would have one over an M3 Touring. I would have one over an M3 Touring if it was similarly priced, all those things. But I would never have one at 185 grand. Even if I won the Euro Millions, I'm not buying one. Mm. So that's why
it was never going to be M3 Touring money, is it?
Never going to be M3 Touring money. But do you see what I mean? Like, if the price felt more appropriate, it feels disproportionately expensive.
Yeah.
And that's what's frustrating about it. But, you know, if you have decided, if you're wealthy enough to not care and you've got one coming, boy, will you be happy. Yeah. It is a fantastic bit of kit.
Yeah, fair.
It is a fantastic bit of kit.
But there's nothing wrong with a Range Rover. Full stop for 90% of what you're going to use it for.
Yeah, probably. But anyway, should we move on?
Yeah.
Because it's time for Stockwatch. We're going to check out some stock that we've seen. Got to get that theme tune sorted out. Now, I need your help, Tony.
Okay.
You have got to stop me from buying a car.
What's that?
So.
Oh, mate, I've just seen it.
I'm in so much trouble here, Tony.
I can't, mate.
I actually don't know how I ended up in this position. But you know, like, I just love cruising Auto Trader and car sales. And I've got this long, you know, months ahead. Anyway, who cares? This is a Gen 1.5 2016 Porsche Panamera Turbo S. Currently listed for sales at Magari Automotive. Have you heard of that? I've never heard of them. Magari Automotive.
Nope.
I mean, where do I start with the good news? Firstly, Voodoo Blue.
Good.
It's a PTS, basically.
Yeah.
It's got lovely wheels, ceramics, carbon ceramics.
Yeah.
Loads of other ice options. 22,000 miles.
Right.
Sunroof.
Yep.
£54,000.
Okay.
Why can I not buy it?
Because it's a pile of shit.
No! Mate, I have so nearly called these people about four times. I obviously would need it to be inspected, but I think they're somewhere like in Plymouth and there's like a Porsche dealer there. So I was like, okay, cool. I'll just get the 111 point inspection. Yeah. Like, make sure ceramics are the big thing because they're going to be 10 grand to replace. So I need to make sure the ceramics got life. This is the 1.5 2016 car. So bore scoring and things like that, really not that much of an issue. The turbos had a recall. So I got to check those. Air suspension needs to be checked. But apart from that, like, mate, what a stunner. What a car. Voodoo Blue.
You've got way too much money. I mean, that's 55 grand and 55 grand a year to maintain.
No, it's not. No, it's not. I've read so many buyer's guides. These are not expensive cars to run. These are not. Panameras compared to Cayennes and all things like that, especially if they're well looked after, if they had the right recalls, there is not a ton of stuff that goes wrong. Servicing, all things like that, they are not, compared to some of the crap I look at, these are not expensive to run, mate.
All right, off you go then. then let me know how you get on in 2 years. And also, let me know how you get on when you want to come out of it, because I don't want it. I will not be able to sell it. Yeah, yeah, for that reason. I will not be able to sell it for you. It will sit around for a year before the next person mad enough to part with any money. And it'd be worth 25 grand.
The thing is, I know you're right, and this is the problem. So the reason I haven't called these people, lovely Magari Automotive, I'm sorry for...
Ruining your day.
We
sure it's a nice example.
I think it's a fantastic example. I think it's the best example out there by a country mile. And I want it. But the thing is, I know you're right. It's the most expensive, whatever that generation Panamera is, by a country mile. It's a quirky spec. It's got the ceramic, so it's expensive. Like, there's all the things about it. Like, and you're right. I don't know how long they've had it for sale, but it's not going to be a car that's going to be easy to move, because for that money as well, you can get the latest generation. You can get the estate version and, you know, you can get the newer generation car. Yeah. Oh, but I just think it's so cool, mate. I think it's so cool, mainly because of the spec. Like, it's probably too low miles for me, because like that's almost like borderline collector miles. 2016, 22,000 miles. Like, that's... You know, I'm going to go and put 10,000 miles on it pretty quickly.
Well, who's going to collect it? The dealer that stocks it? Because no one... I mean, honestly, mate, so please.
Cool. It's so cool, though. I could just take a punt. Like, I'd just be like, oh, I'm just going wild. You know, like all the, look at all those American YouTubers. They buy absolute piles of crap and they make loads of content on it, and it doesn't seem to affect them.
Okay. Off you go, then.
I know I shouldn't, though. I know it's an awful financial decision. I don't think from a maintenance point of view... But I just love it. I just think it's so cool. And actually...
You're going to get a bill, mate.
Maybe I'll get a bill, but I'm not going to get a Chan Stradale bill. I'm not going to get a bill. I'd have to get it inspected. I'd have to. For me, the biggest bill is the ceramics. If they turn around and say the ceramics are needing replacement, then I'm never getting near that car. But...
The suspension, let's go.
Well, no, but they don't... If I mean, low mileage, it's a bit worrying because it suggests it's been sitting around quite a lot. That's when the suspension lets go. But they don't just let go the suspension. It's according to all the buyer's guides and reviews, it's if the cars sit around for a long time or if they have faults and it's a repressurizing of the system, or at most to replace the whole system, $2,000.
Oh, good.
$2,000.
Oh, lovely. So I mean, you've got too much money. Just literally, it's $2,000.
Just no, but on a 55 grand car, it's a bill. But mate, I just paid $5,000 to just change some bolts on the Chan Stradale. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm kind of used to big bills.
Yeah, but it's all right to have one big bill. But when you've got two or three cars and they start commanding bills, it's not funny. You're literally...
But I could be like, well, you know, I'm a YouTuber. Like, I make content on it. Because that's what all those Americans do. It really annoys me. All the Americans, they've got like 50 cars. And they're all shit pieces. And they all work on them endlessly. And then they seem fine.
Are we just copying Matt Armstrong?
No. Matt does something amazing. He buys wrecks and rebuilds them and makes... That's unbelievable. No, but like... It's not a wreck.
Yes.
It's not a wreck. It's 22,000 miles, mate. It's gleaming. It's perfect. Like, it's unbelievable. Gleaming.
Got some nice light on the photos.
Someone else go and buy this car, please, to stop me from making what will. I know, because you're right. I've also never really liked a Panamera, but I love this. You're right that in 6 months' time, I'm going to be like, why did I buy this Panamera? And then I'm going to really struggle to come out of it. So somebody else go and buy it.
And you have to think about these things.
Shout out Magari Automotive for taking some fantastic photos of that. I'm not saying no. I'm not saying no just yet. I'm going to call them this afternoon. what's your stock watch this week, mate? What are you shouting out?
Actually, I'm going to go...
this is nice.
Yeah. 296.
296, a European Prestige.
Yeah.
Black car, very you.
Yeah.
Listed at 2... Have we not done a 296 before? Listed at 230. Didn't we do an F8 or something? What did we do?
No, we done... did we do a Pista?
Oh, yeah, Pista.
Yeah. Fine. What, 296?
You're just Ferrari obsessed.
No, I just... These
is that
jump out
that cheap?
Yes. These jump out at me because 6 months ago or a year ago, they're 300 odd grand.
What's the list price on a 296? Oh, you spec one up. What's the list price on a 296?
Mine was 308.
No.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
With
some options.
Oh, fair.
So take the dealer mark. I mean, there's 100 grand.
2,000 miles on the clock, this one here.
Yeah.
So black on black on black. What else has it got?
It's 100 grand saving. I mean... Let's be honest, it's not going to do that again. It's not going to lose another 100 grand. It's not going to be 129 grand, mate, that car.
No, but it could be 175, 180.
Well, all right. Well, so can everything else.
Not my Panamera.
Well, that hold on a minute. It could actually.
Oh, I want that car so bad.
Okay. Mate, there's a lot of them online. I think when they get, they'll get to 199 at some point soon in the next year or so. I would have thought that's going to be unbelievable car at 199, 200 grand for that.
What's happening to Ferrari, mate?
They've lost the plot, mate.
What's happening to Ferrari used values, mate? This is insane because this is an incredible car,
yeah.
Like a spectacular car,
yeah.
And I know people are going to say, oh, yeah, it's because it's got a V6 in it. It's because it's hybrid. No one wants it. We know the truth is no one wants it because they bought it to get a Purosangue or to get an SF90
XX
Stradale,
yeah.
Or to be consideration for, let's not forget, the new LAF is coming, mm-hmm. Probably at the end of this year.
Oh, they wanted a convertible and they had to buy the coupe as well.
It's playing the game,
yeah.
Is now playing out on the used market because, you know, I say, you are mad if you don't think that is a fantastic car. And look at any single person who's driven that car, journalist, collector, but it is a fantastic car.
Is there a better modern supercar on the market?
I haven't driven 750S yet. I think it's got to be one of the best.
It has to be.
It's
modern. I mean, like when I say modern, I mean in the last year or two release.
Yeah, yeah. It's got to be.
What's better than it?
I don't know.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know. It's a fantastic car, and you're right. Therefore, at 200 grand,
50 of them online. 50.
But a Ferrari? Do Ferrari care about this? Because does this not diminish brand value a little bit?
They used to care. I don't think they care anymore because they floated, didn't they? It's all shareholders. Don't give a toss anymore.
But I think it does. I think the minute you can start buying Ferraris cheaper than Lambos, McLarens, Porsches, etc., it ruins the brand a bit. It opens up the Ferrari brand itself to all the people that they're trying to, you know, sorry, sir, no cars are available. You know, you walk in saying, hi, I want to order a thing. Well, it's a 5-year wait. Well, fine, I'll just go to the forecourt next door and buy one for 150 grand less. Like,
but by the way, while we compare, because we should compare, none of the other mid-engine Ferrari supercars have ever dumped that money in the first year, ever.
Well, and
I can't think of it.
F8s are still more, as we spoke about in recent episodes.
That's what I mean. We've done a comparison. That's why we've done a comparison. They were the similar money.
What's a 458 these days? Because they've been stupid.
A good one would still be 150, 160. For a good one with low mileage.
I'm going to do, this is just me being silly for a second.
We're similar to 488 money. A good 488 is 150, 160.
I want to see what the most expensive 458 is. Just for bants.
Oh, mate, I bet it's 180, 200 grand. There'll be someone out there deluded.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, so it's annoying. It's all the specialis. I don't want this. Okay, let's do coupe. Hold on a sec. Body type.
Coupe. There will be one, between 180 and 200.
Italia.
Boom. For an old knocker.
Here we go. 1,000 mile.
Yep.
458 coupe.
Yep.
185.
There you go. What a load of old rubbish.
And then you've got a couple. Okay, a main dealer, 8,000 mile car, 160.
Well,
so the stupid part is going to be, you're going to get to a point where very soon a 15-year-old 458, close to a 15-year-old 458, is going to be about 20 grand less than a 296.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, well, that always happens. Old Ferraris always appreciate a new Ferrari. Like, but this is all getting a bit silly, people.
Well, they will.
This is
stop.
All getting a bit silly.
Yeah, they will find their feet. Like I said, they're not doing that again. They're not doing another 100 grand. That car won't be 130 in the next year or two. It just won't. Because a 7-year-old 488 is still 160 with good miles on it.
Going back to our chat at the start of the episode with, you know, future classics, all these kind of things, people that... Is this a car at 180, 190 that you buy and you just stick away?
I don't know, mate. It's a computer, that car.
It is a computer, so I would worry about sticking it away. But will these recover? Will people suddenly go, oh, actually, hold on a sec? Because the one that I obviously keep staring at is the Romas. The Romas continue to be in freefall.
I'll tell you when they recover.
When
they stop making them.
When they stop making them.
Yeah. They'll recover then. I don't think they'll recover back to anywhere near where they were list, but they'll hold and trickle, which is normal. That's what normal Ferraris normally do. But obviously they've opened up to a bigger customer base now. They've got a lot more cars on offer. And obviously they play the game with the people as well. Same as Porsche. Porsche do the same thing.
Yeah. So Porsche, I don't know. Yeah.
But you're talking different money with Porsche. That's the problem. You know, when you've got a lot of 911s sitting on the market, they're 90, 100 grand.
Yeah.
When you've got a lot of 296, and it's a different customer, mate. You know, the customer that's got 80 or 90 grand for a car, he ain't got 250 grand for a car.
I don't know why, though. As good, I don't sit here getting excited that I'm going to go and buy that soon.
And I don't, but no one is, because there's 50 of them online.
Yeah, it's hard to get.
It's only
really
been out
like,
a year.
Yeah. And I know how good it is, but I'm not
incredible.
Going. Why would he want one?
We saw the same with the SF90 as well, remember?
Yeah.
Same with,
are they recovering a little bit or not?
I think that's masked because of the people had to keep them and buy them for that FX.
Yeah, XX Stradale
thing. The XX thing.
Andrea, when I went up to Alexander's to film that Bentley, he had one in that literally, he sold it whilst I was there. Very nice stock, but I can't remember what he sold it at, but a good, like a money that I thought, wow, that's a lot of car for that money.
Yeah, it starts with a three.
I think they'll go back up because people will realize SF90s.
Fair.
Because they are baby hypercars.
Full on.
And even though they are apparently pigs if you don't use them, or the batteries and the tech.
Correct.
You know, if you're using it regularly like Schmee, you're fine. But if you leave them parked up, apparently they do start to go a bit wrong.
Did you see the drag race online with the 918?
No. SF90 trounced it.
Drove off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, people. I think they'll make their way back up to half a mil, I think.
Yeah, yeah. You think that goes back to half a mil?
I think so. No, in time.
Will we still be alive?
Yeah. Look at TDFs, mate. They're back up at 850.
Yeah, but no, they're more than that. Some of a million quid. I don't think that car's special enough to do that, the SF90. I can't see that going back up 25, 30%, personally. I think it might stable. I can't see it going back up near list.
Maybe.
The jump's too big.
Well, anyway, two fantastic cars out there for you to go and buy, people. A bargain 296 at European Prestige and possibly the best Panamera in Europe, which I need you to buy so that I don't. anyway, can you believe it? Right now, unbeknownst to us, the Geneva Motor Show is happening.
Mate, I didn't even know it was happening.
Yeah, so just to bring everyone up to speed in case you're going, what are you on about? Geneva Motor Show used to be, I would say, the biggest industry event each year. Like, when I started in this game, like, bloody hell, that was the thing you had to go to.
It was
like,
the car show to go to.
It was exhausting and it was full on, but it was the place to be from a network. You would start your year, you'd secure your business, you'd meet up with all the different manufacturers, the press team, see all the new cars, everything was unveiled. Yeah. Like, if you didn't go to Geneva, you were like, that was bad for your year.
Yep.
and then as we've discussed over the recent years with COVID and things like that and the money and the growth of things like Festival of Speed and Quail out in America, well, yeah, just interest had disappeared. The need for it has seemingly disappeared.
Well, I think COVID killed it.
COVID did kill it.
COVID killed it.
Just the rise of social media and things like that. People launch cars in a different way now.
They do, yeah.
But it is taking place. And the big news out of it was the Renault R5 finally got unveiled. Unbelievably cool thing. We've spoken about it a bit before. Three different powertrains, I think. Two sort of urban and then one for a little bit.
From 25 grand?
That's what they're saying. They're estimating from 25 grand in the UK for the base urban car.
Yeah.
So I think that means the Larry one's going to be sort of the high 30s, I guess.
I would have thought so,
for the long range one. It looks awesome, I think. They're doing everything right in my mind in terms of whether the inside looks really nice. That's how it should be. Let's wait and see. I can't work out how big it is.
It looks big.
Well, you know, big is relative, but it's not a little tiny car anymore. But people don't make tiny cars anymore, so... No. I think that's good. Yeah, good on them. I can't wait to see one. You can go and buy an R5 pass, which apparently is like 150 quid and gets you one of the first slots and you can get an early car. I think with all new EVs, don't buy an early one. Wait 6 months, just let some of the initial snagging stuff out the way.
Or lease one.
Or lease one, yeah.
Leasing, it back.
Leasing is going to be a very good option on that car. Yeah. But yeah, I look forward to having a go one. I'm definitely going to try and borrow one once they're in the UK.
Did you see...
Go on.
You've jogged my memory. Did you see Hyundai?
Hyundai
will discontinue the i20N and the i30N.
Yeah, petrol N's.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a shame.
Because the N is now going to be purely electric. Performance is going to be electric. In this country or worldwide?
Not sure worldwide, okay. But Europe, I would think. Because it won't be just this country, will it? It'll be Europe.
Yeah.
What a shame.
Well, just the next... manufacturer replacing an iconic mark with electric only equivalents.
Yeah. It hasn't left the huge legacy that N Hyundai, but it's an iconic little car for the time it was out. I mean, it's a bloody brilliant car. Both of them.
I think as we've said, even the Kona N, as we've said, that those three, Kona, i20 and i30, are not overlooked because I think people know about them.
Great car, mate.
But they're unbelievably good little things. Yeah, proper little hot hatches. Yep. That's what we should do more often. We often say, Megane and the Civic are the go-tos. I thought, we should start including that as proper driver's hot hatches.
Yeah, it's in there, but I think it's still third out of them three on the list. But it's also a lot cheaper.
Yeah, performance, character, reliability, all those different things.
Yeah, reliability,
it's a winner.
5-year warranty.
Even though we're desperately trying not to lose subscribers by talking about EVs, I do have to mention one. Ineos, my beloved Grenadier, quirkiest but coolest SUV that lives.
Mr. Radcliffe, sir.
Oh, Sir Jim.
Just bought Man United.
I know.
Or a bit of it.
I know.
He's got a lot
of
money.
Is that impressive? Is that cool?
Well, but he's leaving a legacy, isn't he? That's what he's doing it for.
But he owns everything. He owns the cycling team. He owns the F1 team.
Yeah, yeah.
He owns a football team in somewhere else.
Nice,
there you go. Yeah. So you know,
which is not very good, but
yeah. Fine. Okay.
Well done, sir.
New model from them, Fusilier.
No idea.
Fusilier. Reason I'm bringing it up, interesting, because firstly, you know, the Grenadier was really, in my mind, focused on that one specific job of basically going to the places that no other vehicle could get you to. Like it was good on the road, but really, where it was at its best was just absolutely
off-road.
In the Sahara Desert.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, electric, because the new Fusilier, electric. I thought, well, that's interesting, because how far can you go off-road? Well, he's not a stupid man, old Jim.
He's absolutely that. He's not.
They've spoken about the fact that there will definitely be a range extender version for that, but also looking at, I think, you know, various, what would you call it? Power sources? No, various powertrains.
Powertrains.
There we go. So I like the look of it. I have to say it's a little bit smaller, a little bit more punchy than the old Grenadier. And I just like that because they're they are independent, but because he obviously has entered this world in a bit of a here we are, boom, kind of way, he's been a bit outspoken. I saw a few quotes from him where he was just like, look, let's face it, EVs work in some environments, but they're not perfect in every environment. And we've got to look at different options. And range extender is going to be good for us. And this is going to be the most capable EV in an off-road environment. And therefore, you know, we need to make sure it can go distances. And we're looking at other things. Like, he was just very much like, we're
honest.
Not honest. Yeah. I saw that. I think the quote that was in Top Gear or whatever was like, we're not going to be like a sheep and follow the masses into this kind of all-only BEV market.
Yeah.
We're going to look at all the options. And I like that. And I saw Mercedes came out saying that they're also going to continue making combustion engine vehicles well into 2030s. And I think, you know, we speak about it and we're not going to bang on about it, but I like now that people are opening this conversation into multiple options. And I just thought it was kind of cool that they were like, not going, no, here's our electric. We're going to make an electric one.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, here's our new model. There's going to be loads of varieties. We're going to look at different ways to power this thing.
Yeah.
I think that's cool.
An electric generator range extender type vehicle makes complete sense to me.
Yeah, as does an extreme hybrid.
Yeah.
As does a 1-litre crazy hybrid, you know. So,
yeah.
just, you know, all worth looking into. But yeah, cool little car. And as I say, for me, size-wise, I'd like something a little bit smaller, punchier. The Grenadier is cool, but maybe a touch too big for me. But anyway, long and short of it, I think that is it for our car news and our episode. There were a few other things unveiled at Geneva, but nothing particularly that caught my eye. You didn't even know what was going on, so I
literally didn't have a clue.
Fine. So we'll wrap up this week's episode. I'm just looking now. Do we tease the new format of Rate My Ride?
You can if you want to just drop a little
gem at the end. For those of you that have stuck with us right until the end, because I think some of you drift off.
Don't be like that.
There's a core audience right here at the end. Let's just say Rate My Ride 2024 is going to take on a bit of a new meaning.
Yeah.
And we want to physically, is that right?
Yeah.
Physically rate your rides.
Yeah.
By driving them.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm going to come and slate it. Going on you.
It's, so I think maybe we'll launch it next week. Maybe we'll launch that concept next week.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Come into some of your houses, or you come into us and we drive in your car.
Basically, there you go.
That's it.
I was teasing it. Tony's just revealed the whole concept. But there you have it. We'll end things there. If you've been listening to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts a few days earlier than the old video episode, well done you. You can review, rate this podcast. Please do so. If you're watching us, then subscribe now. Turn on notifications. If you want to follow Tony in the meantime, he's at Tony Gravelwood Car Sales on most social media platforms. I'm at Seen Through Glass, and this podcast is at behindtheglass_podcast. We'll be back with you next week for the full explanation of all new things, Rate My Ride. Bye-bye.
See ya.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.